You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This week, Tea and Sympathetic Magic, Chapter 7. Cousin Metis waited for them in the hall below, also in a brand new best dress, though this one was a deep sapphire blue. "Are you the bride?" Metis asked immediately, looking Neem up and down with great suspicion. "I was going to ask you the same thing," Neem said. "Could Metis be in on this? Did she know her at all?" "Don't be silly," giggled Mama. "You're both maids of honour for the new Duchess-to-be, of course." The cousins turned and stared at her. "Mama," said Neem, "who exactly is marrying Cousin Henry today? Come along, hurry up." Her mother seized each of them by an arm and led them through the now empty grand dining room, where no sign remained of the fancy wedding breakfast, or even the tables upon which it had been set. Mama led them through the glass doors to the garden and along the winding path that led towards the small family temple. Did the new best dresses have time-defying properties? It felt like hours must have passed since Neem went upstairs to change. The servants had been busy, quite clearly, as the tables containing the entire wedding breakfast were now set out on the croquet lawn, along with 100 or so white linen chairs, flapping in the breeze. "Is Cousin Henry being married off by elves?" Neem asked, as they were rushed on past an acre of teacups, each brimming with tea and piping hot under a layer of preservation spells. "Many hands make light work," carolled Mrs. Galatea Seaborn, with the confidence of a middle-aged lady who had never worked a day in her life, unless you counted fretting, catastrophizing, and matchmaking. The wedding cake, still wrapped in all its protective charms, towered over the tables of food and drink. It looked malevolent, vibrating with power barely contained by the layers of white sugar and almond paste. Was it bigger than before? So many layers and so wide, it would never fit through a standard portal. Why, you could fit a person inside it. Neem dug her heels in, refusing to follow her mama further until she had got a good look at that cake. A new fondant figure was stuck to the side of the cake. A man in dark grey, his face and limbs half covered in thick marzipan. "Mama," Neem said, "where exactly is Mr. Thornbury?" "That man," said Mrs. Galatea Seaborn. "I'm sure I don't know where he's got to." The cake twitched. Neem let out a small gasp as if she'd been slapped, and her mother, or whomever truly had control of her mother, swept her on again, along the garden path until they reached the incline that led up, up to the hill that had the best view on the island. Here, for a second time, Neem dug her heels in hard. "No, Mama, I will not take another step until you tell me the name of Cousin Henry's bride-to-be." "Me neither," chimed in Cousin Metis. "Good luck budging both of us, Aunt Galatea." The spell clouding Mama's eyes seemed to tighten its grip on her. She straightened her back, genuinely prepared to carry both young ladies up the hill to the temple if necessary. "My sister always wanted to be a duchess," she declared dreamily. "If you mean Auntie Antiope, she won that prize a generation ago, when she married the old Duke of Storm," Neem said impatiently. Cousin Metis had come to a very different conclusion. She was pale with shock, her freckles standing out furiously against her milky skin. "No," she breathed, "it's impossible. I wouldn't believe... She's his aunt!" Metis was up the hill in an instant, her deep blue dress caught by all the breezes as she hurried up the little marble steps inlaid in the slope, with all the athletic power of a young lady who learned 14 different kinds of cotillion before she was out. "Metis, wait," called Neem, taking off after her cousin. leaving her mamma behind. Cousin Henry and Aunt Hecate? Some aristocratic families residing in the teacup aisles further away from town and court were infamous for intermarrying a little too closely from time to time, but aunts were always supposed to be off limits. At the top of the steps, Neame was dazzled by the early morning sunshine hitting the bright white temple, with the backdrop of the prettiest piece of ocean this side of the Lyric Sea. They had been so happy here as children. Little Neame and little Henry and little Metis, careless and relaxed and easily sunburnt, with their matching pale skin. Their mothers had gossiped on the lawn below, drinking tea, while the children strayed higher and higher up those steps until they were blissfully out of sight. Antiope, Hecate, and Galatea Seaborn, famously three of the most talented magical women of their generation. All three came out and were married in the same season, and there was only one eligible duke that year. Antiope caught him for herself, becoming the Duchess of Storm, and the other two found themselves genial, easygoing husbands who understood that becoming a Seaborn had a status to it only surpassed by the highest ranks of the gentry, the earls and the dukes. Neame had never seen this many people in her family's temple. There were hats as far as the eye could see. Guests sat on every stone bench, some of them squished up to make room. The local priestess of marriages, estate planning and contract law stood in formal robes at the altar of Uranos and Gaia. Neame wondered whether it had taken a hefty donation to the parish to get her here, or if her eyes were clouded. Juno and Lady Liesel were in attendance, still in their night rails, as Mama had apparently not seen fit to provide them with brand new gowns. It was hard to tell if they were enchanted or not. She recognised many of the guests, even from the backs of their heads. Villagers, of course, and local dignitaries. A few of them looked around, seeming confused, but others sat rigidly on the benches, staring straight ahead. Neame had never seen so much correct posture in her life. Impossibly, the rest of Henry's house party were also in attendance. How had that happened? The gentleman, Neame might understand, but that was clearly Letty Agnew, sitting between Lady Agnew and Dr. Simon St. Swithin's. Had the Agnew mother and daughter cast away all propriety since 4 o'clock this morning, deciding it was no matter to travel by portal after all? Metis still hovered on that top step, unsure what to do. Neame squeezed her hand in what she hoped was a comforting manner. "We won't let this happen," she promised. She could see Henry now. He stood ramrod straight at the altar with the priestess, and Neame had no doubt that the cloud had been cast over him too. Everything about him that made him Henry, his pink cheeks and over-jovial manner, his silly jokes and loud booming laugh and expansive hand gestures, none of that was in attendance. Even his cravat was a dull shade of cream that entirely failed to clash with his red-gold beard. Neame had never felt so attached to her cousin's usual pompous antics in all her life. Now that she saw him stripped of his personality, she was going to save him. Lady Lovage and her daughters flocked around Henry, their matching blonde updos circled in orange blossom and myrtle. They looked as silly as ever, the whole gaggle. And Neame was convinced that there was no cloud in any of their eyes. They were enabling this monstrosity of a wedding of their own accord, and every one of them looked horribly smug about it. What did they expect to get out of this? Fresh-cut dowries and endless favours from the incoming Duchess of Storm, perhaps? Mr. Thornbury was nowhere in sight, and this, of all things, concerned Neame the most. She could not forget that the cake had twitched. "Where is she?" Metis asked beneath her breath, wringing her hands. music began. A small cluster of harpists and flautists, concealed in a nearby shrubbery, producing a perfect lilting melody. "I think we have to walk the aisle," said Neem apologetically. "I am not endorsing this farce," Meta snapped back, not bothering to keep her voice down. It bounced around the temple walls, echoing loudly. Hardly anyone winced. Metis began the long walk down the aisle, marching like a soldier going to war. Someone placed a bouquet in her hands, and she swung it back and forth like she knew at some point she would have to use it as a weapon. Neem scurried after her cousin, accepting a matching bouquet without complaint, wanting to get this part over with as quickly as possible. It was easy to tell which guests were clouded and which were not, by the small titters of laughter in response to Metis's behaviour. About half and half, then. Good to know. Finally, the cousins reached the altar, exchanging uneasy looks. The music swelled louder. Aunt Hecate came over the rise of the hill, every inch the triumphant bride. Neem barely recognised her at first. With all the magic pinging back and forth around the grounds today, it should hardly be a surprise that Aunt Hecate had found the time to apply a Fountain of Youth charm to herself. It might be months or even years before anything surprised Neem ever again. Aunt Hecate had clearly overcooked the Fountain of Youth charm. She now appeared embarrassingly young, with rosy cheeks, pouting lips, and long braids entwined with flowers. She barely looked old enough to be out in society. Neem's mamma came over the rise behind her, throwing handfuls of rose petals over her now much younger sister, with every appearance of wanting to be here. It occurred to Neem that this entire situation would be doubly, triply mortifying if she did not know about the cloud in her mamma's eyes. Aunt Hecate reached the altar, pushed back her floral braids, and simpered. Henry Jupiter, the Duke of Storm, looked utterly besotted with his bride. Neem knew none of this was his fault, but part of her still squirmed with frustration at him. "I have objections," Cousin Metis announced loudly, as Henry and Aunt Hecate took each other's hands. The priestess, clouded after all, ignored her and began the formal chanting ritual, calling on the elements and the gods to bless their union. Cousin Henry didn't even flinch. The bride gave her daughter a sweet smile and bowed her head to the altar. Cousin Metis turned to Neem in a panic. "I don't know how to stop it. What do I do?" Neem had no idea. It all seemed so jolly when she and Mr. Thornberry were catching out Henry's suitors with their tiny pieces of sympathetic magic, those subtle courting charms that nudged things along a bit but were easily found and broken. She did not know how to begin to unwind a piece of enchantment this complex and powerful. And where was Mr. Thornberry? Not here, that was for certain. The cake had twitched. "I don't know," Neem admitted aloud. Something hit her foot. It was a croquet ball. A small, round, bright red leather croquet ball. She looked up, searching for its source, and saw Letty Agnew, clearly unclouded, smiling impishly at her from the third row back. "When in doubt, chaos," Neem murmured, transforming the ball into a small, prickly hedgehog. "What use is that?" Metis demanded. "We're only limited by our imaginations," said Neem, and threw the hedgehog directly into the face of the chanting priestess. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Twitter at TansyRR or at Sheep Might Fly. Find me on Facebook at TansyRR Books. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of cool rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. See you next week for more Tea and Sympathetic Magic.